from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Catholic bishops, the American Catholic bishops, there's so many, but ours, I feel so American on occasions like this. Our Catholic bishops have concluded their meeting in Dallas, Texas. They issued their policy on pedophile priests and other annoyances in the clergy, and went on their way. Some of the representatives of the victims were not entirely satisfied, although I thought that the because it wasn't entirely a zero-tolerance policy, but the bishops, I believe, did agree to build a museum of zero-tolerance to indicate what zero-tolerance would be like were there to be such a policy. And I think that's got to be a step forward. But on this Father's Day, it's nice to know that basically the bishops have this message for Father's Day. Molestation is forever. Hello, welcome to the show.
be what you want it to be. But sweetheart, it takes time. Someday you're gonna shine. You'll see. You'll be a Russian acrobat. You'll be like Burt Bacharach. You come to the party, you say, oh, what's new, pussycat? Someday you're gonna shine. You'll see. Don't wanna talk about it. You come around to tell it. You're beautiful, can't you see? Someday you're gonna shine.
Yeah, you're gonna shine.
He's only, what, 3 years away now? Interesting. He got married again. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. I'm Harry Shearer from the Edge of America, from the home of the homeless. And, yeah, Paul is closer to that than he is to the Paul that sang with that accent. Let's put it that way. We are so back to normal, ladies and gentlemen. The normal meter is registering 99.9999 because a truce has been declared. Now, it's important to know, in these days when we thought we were in a state of perpetual, almost perpetual war, that a truce this week was announced. I don't know if it rose to your radar screen, but in fact, a truce in this seemingly unending war was announced publicly this week in Washington, D.C., between the CIA and the FBI. They actually did. They went out, and the number two guy at the CIA and the number one guy at the FBI, so the war starts all over again. But anyway, they announced that they were having a truce because they've been doing nothing but sniping at each other, leaking damaging material about the other agency since the whole, hey, we knew about 9/11 before 9/11 controversy began, as has been noted here on many an occasion. So probably not responding to these comments. Mueller of the FBI, and I can't tell you his name, from the CIA, announced that there will be a truce. Duration unknown. Place your bets now. The journalism class in Chicago that's been working on the problem for 3 years announced their conclusion, timed to the 30th anniversary of the Watergate break-in. Hey, happy Watergate, everybody. Deep Throat is Pat Buchanan. Keep it secret. If it's Pat Buchanan, please keep it a secret. Because there was a residual respect for Deep Throat until that. That's what they said. This journalism class spent 3 years investigating the issue. And that was their conclusion. Their list included a couple other Nixon speechwriters, a guy I've never heard of, and I examined the issue a little bit myself, I think Mark Felt of the FBI was on the list. Somebody was felt by the FBI, I know that. But now, ladies and gentlemen, time for our exclusive feature.
We're so sorry.
Hey, Paul, you're almost 64. It's the Apology of the Week. This is a good one. Filmmaker Woody Allen returned to court to thank jurors for sitting through a 9-day trial that ended in a settlement. That's right, Woody and Gene Demanian settled. Another truce. It's a truce week. He settled with the two producers he'd accused of cheating him out of $12 million. Said a sheepish-looking Allen, according to the Associated Press. Of course, he's always sheepish. That's the deal. That's the shtick. Anyway, according to the Associated Press, said a sheepish-looking Allen to jurors, "I'm sorry for all this. I know, quote, I know it was not fun to sit there and listen to all this. It sure was dull," unquote. He was talking about the trial. The reviews are in. Terms of the settlement were not released. Dumanian was in court and did not comment on the case. Her boyfriend and partner, Jackie Safra, was not in court and could not be reached for comment. Juror Paul Meinl said he found Allen entertaining but not very concerned about money. Juror Ian Lawrence, a retired telephone technician, said he wouldn't have given Allen much if the case had gone to the jury. "I would have awarded Woody $1. No wonder he's sorry. I think he got more than a dollar. I'm just guessing. Anyway, Woody is sorry. He's sorry he made the jury sit through it. He didn't apologize to Gene Demanian, just to the jurors, which means he may need them again someday. Apropos of just great timing department. At a time when the American Catholic Church is rent by controversy involving not only the issue of pedophile priests, but the reactions of bishops to them in various bishoprics. It is a word. Rupert Murdoch announces He's considering converting to Catholicism. It seems appropriate. It seems appropriate that when a religion gets a possibly undeserved reputation as a hideout for predators, that Rupert Murdoch would be attracted to it. He regularly attends Mass when he's in New York. He and his wife, Wendy, have agreed to baptize their child, Grace, a Catholic. He said, quote, "I believe in a God. I'm not a strictly religious person. I was brought up as a Protestant. I was married for a long time to a Catholic wife, Anna, whom he left for Wendy, which gave me a real insight into the real strength of the Catholic Church." Unquote. That's a wife he divorced to marry a younger Asian woman, and that gave him an insight into the real strength of the Catholic Church, quote Rupert Murdoch. He does not see himself as a European. "I am just an Anglo-Saxon," he said. Of course, he became an American citizen to buy the Fox Net, to start the Fox Network, excuse me. But Rupert Murdoch, ladies and gentlemen, may become a Catholic. Isn't that interesting? I thought so. You know, I got to stop talking about mundane items because I can talk about the FBI and the CIA and the war on terrorism and Al-Qaeda, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the other Bush administration, till the cows come home. I never get as much mail as I do when I talk about parrots, feral parrots, and jacaranda trees being in bloom. You people, with the plants and the animals and the thing. "Dear Harry, I live on the eastern side of Telegraph Hill in San Francisco's North Beach, some steep blocks away from Washington Square Park. This company of feral parrots, which are greenish and speckled with some red around the head, like to hang out in this tree behind my place off the Filbert Street steps during the day and make a racket. Dear Harry, I hate to disagree, but jacaranda flowers are in no way pink. Last week you spoke about the pink-purple flowers that litter our cars and streets. They are purple. Purple, 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 not pink, not pink-purple. In my opinion, they smell like cat pee. I love them anyway. Dear Harry, there is a flock of feral monk parrots or parakeets living in the suburbs east of Portland, Oregon." Ooh, that's a very northern spot. "At a latitude of approximately 45.5 degrees north." This is considerably farther north than New York, or wherever you mentioned. "The Portland parrots hang out near the airport and in the Gresham suburbs and have been around for 10 to 15 years. They number about 30 or so, are reproducing, and apparently make a living from backyard bird feeders, and apparently find somewhere to get out of the rain. They aren't native to Oregon." Thank you. Thank you for that. From Junction City. "Dear Harry, I grew up in Pasadena, and I was told by neighbors that those loudmouth parrots flying around the San Gabriel Valley had escaped from a private aviary in the hills of Altadena. Others maintain there were rebel parrots who bailed on the Arboretum in Arcadia. Sometimes peacocks and peahens also showed up in northern Pasadena. The parrots had a shotgun. A neighbor around the corner from us fired a shotgun at them. They didn't come back for months. That was back in 92. Last time I went to Pasadena to visit my folks, the parrots were cruising." And on one more trivial item that draws mail, unlike the other stuff, on the subject of Coca-Cola, from our Atlanta desk. "In the mid-1980s, the Coca-Cola company was forced to retreat from its ill-advised plan to market the new Coke. Old Coke had been made with sugar for nearly a century by then, but new Coke was made with corn syrup. With much fanfare, the return of Old Coke, a.k.a. Coca-Cola Classic, was announced, which the company promised would be made from the original formula. The company misspoke. Coca-Cola Classic was introduced, but it was and is made with corn syrup, 40% cheaper than sugar, and more immune to global price fluctuations. Coke Classic made a higher profit. The original formula gone for good here in the United States, but lives on, as your listener last week noted, in Latin America and Europe, where sugar is more plentiful than corn. With one exception. In larger U.S. cities, every mid-March, Coca-Cola makes a limited run of kosher for Passover Coke, which is placed for sale in some supermarkets in predominantly Jewish neighborhoods. That's savvy. Since corn is not kosher for Passover, this Coca-Cola Classic is made with sugar and is the only way in North America to get the long-promised original formula." I think we know more than we need to know. So now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a passel of tales of airport security, sometimes imitated, seldom duplicated. Dear Harry, Tim writes, when I fly, I invariably bring along a flask full of whiskey. The time wasted feels less cramped than wasted if I have whiskey to nip at, and I'm sure not driving. In the last 9 months, the pewter flask has provoked a few different reactions in airport security. Three times a sniff test has sufficed to assure them it wasn't gasoline. Twice I've been told to take a swig after which I asked if they watched my Adam's apple, and then was told to do it again. And once I was told I was breaking open container laws and that the whiskey would have to be poured out. I tried to protest that the flask was full and that open containers of alcohol were dispensed on every plane at the airport. Her supervisor was standing nearby. He shook his head and said, against the law. But the woman was sympathetic. She asked if I didn't want to turn around and go drink it somewhere else in the airport. A fine idea. I didn't drink all 8 ounces, but drunk I certainly was and had a very pleasant flight indeed. Mr. Shearer, during a random luggage hand search at O'Hare Airport, the security agent found among my possessions an object which she perceived to be a threat, my pencil sharpener. It was nothing special, just one of those small metal stick-your-pencil-in-it-and-twist pencil sharpeners, but she withdrew it from my pencil box gingerly, as though it might go off at any minute. You can't bring this with you on the plane, she said. You'll have to check it. But it's just a pencil sharpener, I objected. This is a blade, sir. Her elaborately illustrated faux fingernail pointed to the 1 centimeter blade contained within the sharpener. Just barely, I commented. You'll have to leave it here or check it. You realize, I pointed out, that a sharp pencil is a much better weapon than a pencil sharpener. You'll have to leave it here or check it. I found myself escorted by a camouflage-clad military man with an automatic rifle back to the check-in desk, where my pencil sharpener was tagged and checked through to London, the sole piece of luggage I checked on that flight. Following which, with a pencil box full of sharp pencils, I passed once more through security and boarded the plane. Dear Harry, recently my wife and I traveled with our 3-year-old daughter and 3-month-old son from Cincinnati to Philadelphia. This was a spur-of-the-moment trip, so we bought our tickets from Delta as a last-minute deal. We were advised that since we bought our tickets at the last minute, we would be considered a high-security risk. As we would learn, this means going through a search while checking baggage, going through the terminal security checkpoint, and going through a search at the gate. Most of the trip was uneventful. The security personnel were mostly very polite. It did not let on if they thought it absurd to be searching a family with little children. However, during the search at the gate in Cincinnati, my 3-year-old daughter became suddenly shy or fearful when asked by the searcher to hold up her arms so she could wander. It is not unusual for our daughter to balk at the requests of strangers. It usually takes her a few minutes to warm up to people, so we were not surprised and we encouraged her, telling her it was okay, it wouldn't hurt, etc. The security guard, a stout grandmotherly type, tried to encourage our daughter also, but still, our daughter refused to cooperate. Just as I thought it would be best to just give up, the security guard said to my daughter, quote, your mommy and daddy are going to get on the plane and you're going to have to stay here unless you hold your arms up and let me do this, unquote. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. An exclusive feature of this broadcast.
in the jungle, way deep in the sticks. Animals had a pool already dug their kicks. Down around the corner from the coconut grove, big black Cadillac at the monkey drove. He was a driving motherfucker. Lord, he really shed a dry. Now the monkey said to the crocodile, sit down, son, we gonna play cards a little while. Crocodile said, ain't no fool. You know my thing is always just shooting fool. He was no chump, motherfucker. Lord, he really shaved dry. Got a stump just to fit his rump. You gonna play that game, you gonna make your eyeballs jump. Lord, he stuck it to the grizzly bear. You know he played wild aces while all the seven was there. He was a playing motherfucker. He really shaved him dry.
This is LeShow. The recording industry now wants to charge royalties on sales of used CDs. That's nice. Thank you for that. Preliminary results of a University of Rhode Island analysis of the eye movements of automobile drivers using cell phones find that the drivers have a reduced field of view, in effect, tunnel vision. URI Industrial Engineering Professor Manbir Sodhai and Psychology Professor Jerry Cohen, we can all get together, used a head-mounted eye-tracking device on volunteer drivers. You don't think the device would? No, I don't think so. Maybe. I think maybe having that device on your head would. They concluded the alertness of the drivers decreased considerably when they were conducting cognitive tasks, such as remembering a list of items, calculating in one's head, or using a cell phone. So don't think while. Forget about drinking while driving. Don't be thinking while driving. Cognitive tasks. Thinking is a cognitive task. That's why Rush Limbaugh is such a good driving radio. And you probably know this already. I thought the U.S. had made a deadly error, said John Locker. My first thought was they were sending their spy plane pictures through the wrong satellite by mistake and broadcasting secret information across Europe. In fact, live transmissions on Telstar 11, a commercial satellite widely viewable in Europe, showed directly where U.S. spy planes were and what they were doing as they hunted for armed smugglers and drug traffickers operating in Bosnia and across Kosovo's porous borders. Not only are the planes transmitting exactly what they and military commanders are seeing, they also transmit the exact coordinates of what they are seeing. A few days after Locker found the channels, references to the military surveillance channels being broadcast on Telstar 11 were published on the Internet. Locker said he then made dozens of phone calls and sent email warnings to the U.S. Defense Department and other military commands. The State Department referred his calls to the U.S. European Command, where a spokesman first told him, "We are at war, you know." Then he added, "Let me ask you, do you know the difference between information and intelligence? What you're seeing is information." According to Defense Department guidelines, real-time aerial imagery from unmanned aerial vehicles is classified secret. Even after senior NATO, U.S., and British military figures were made aware, nothing was done to prevent open reception of the spy plane transmissions. Locker described, and in an interview for BBC Television airing this week, Locker describes his frustration at finding his warnings completely ignored. The same Telstar satellite carries Polish radio television and British radio broadcasts to troops overseas. These broadcasts are encrypted to prevent unauthorized reception, but the live products of the latest U.S. surveillance equipment is freely available for all to see. That's us, free to air. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of year again, and for the first time since everything changed, a conversation we've been wondering since last September, what's on the minds of America's young women? So, a new definition of heroism emerges momentarily as you listen to the conversation segment from this year's Miss Kentucky pageant.
Well, here we are back at the 2002 Miss Kentucky Scholarship Pageant, and we've whittled it down to five contestants. We are here with the five finalists for the final phase of competition, the onstage interview. Congratulations and good luck, ladies. I tell you what, you're in a hot seat right now. Are you ready? Okay, I'm going to remind you, you have 20 seconds for each question. I'll give you a nice big nod. How about that? Here we go. And that's number one, Maria Maldonado. It has been said in order to keep the rewards, we must take the risks. What risks have you taken?
This year, the risks I've taken have been opening myself up more to people. I think sometimes I have the tendency to kind of conceal myself. And this year, I have really just come out of my shell and just shown people who I am. And I've really been myself. And that's definitely a big risk that I've taken.
Thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you.
Mary Catherine Correll. There are 86,400 seconds in every day. Get that one? What do you do to make the most of those seconds?
Well, and these are the wise words of my dad. He says, we make choices every day. And, you know, you can make the choice to be happy every day and live it to the fullest. So I try to do that. That, and coming from a large family, keeps me pretty busy, too, with my six other brothers and sisters.
Thank you so much. Bryn Chapman, what influence, if any, does the hit MTV show The Osbournes have on our youth today?
Well, it is the most popular show on MTV right now. I'm sorry to say I haven't actually watched it, but it seems that real TV is becoming a very popular thing, which kind of worries me because I am a performance major and I do hope to act one day, so.
Thank you so much, Bryn. Bethany Moore, what was one heroic thing that you have been called upon to do in your life?
I think sitting here right now is an heroic thing. Because each of us girls are getting out into the community and speaking on a platform issue that we are so passionate about. And there aren't many students today that I would say are doing that. And so I think all of us here have done something heroic for that.
Thank you so much, Bethany. Heather Johnson, have you ever laughed at yourself?
All the time. I laugh at myself every day because it's the easiest way to let stress go. If you can make fun of yourself, it makes the days go by easier.
Thanks so much, Heather. Are these ladies great or what? You talk about being in the hot seat. They don't know these questions before I ask them, so there's no way they can prepare for this. Earlier in rehearsal, I asked them what was their favorite color and why. So, not quite the same questions. Thank you so much, ladies. You have been tremendous. Give yourself a round of applause. All right. Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. You've gotten a taste of what they believe and who they are. And join us in a moment for the announcement of a new Miss Kentucky 2002.
Oh, we won't have that announcement, but they are heroes. They are heroes.
Turpentine, dandelion wine. I turned the corner and I'm feeling fine. Shooting up the birds on the telephone line. Picking them up, who's gonna mine? I got a fire in my belly, got a fire in my head. Going higher and higher until I'm dead. Brother Gene is big and mean, and he doesn't have much to say. He had a little woman who I whooped each day, but now she's gone away. I got drunk last night, kicked mama down the stairs, but I'm so I don't care. Oh, let the sun shine bright on my old Kentucky home and the young.
says she's plain, but she's just being kind. Papa says she's pretty, but he's almost blind. We don't let her out much except at nights, but I don't care, cause I'm all right. Oh, let the sun shine bright on my old Kentucky home, and them young folks roll on the floor. Oh, let the sun shine bright on my old Kentucky home, keep those hard times away from my door. Turpentine, dandelion wine, I turn the corner and I'm feeling fine. Shooting at the birds on the telephone line, picking them up with this gun of mine. I got a fire in my belly, got a fire in my head, going higher and higher until I'm dead.
Hello, I'm Susan Molinari. You know, the workplace holds many hazards for us all. I ought to know. I used to work in one. But seriously, these days, we all need to learn the do's and don'ts of how to get along together in the workplace. Men, women, and everybody in between. You've been made to take a few minutes out from the job you're expected to complete today to watch this video. So let's get right down to business. Here to help us learn the right way and the wrong way to relate on the job is Dr. Carl Jarrett, a nationally recognized expert on appearing in training videos.
Thanks, Susan. Or should I say, Ms. Molinari?
Susan's fine.
I know it. But notice that I don't assume it's okay to be on a first-name basis with someone just because she smells like camellias and wears a skirt up to her poop deck. Now, here's our first vignette. Let's meet Jason, Justin, and Elaine. They've just finished watching a video on the sexual harassment policy of their company.
Wow, Justin. Nice to know Megacorp has such a detailed policy, isn't it?
You bet. Hey, Jason, look at Elaine.
Huh?
She's a walking case of harassment.
What do you mean?
Well, here's her ass, and that's what they meant.
Well, a lot of fun for Jason and Justin, maybe, but not much fun for Elaine.
Well, that kind of behavior would definitely be classified as appropriate only after working hours, wouldn't it?
Or before, unless Elaine signed a binding release, which sounds like more fun than it is. Now, let's see how that same situation could be treated to make everyone a winner.
Hey, Justin. Good to know Megacorp has such a detailed policy, isn't it?
You bet. Wouldn't you agree, Elaine?
Uh-huh. Give me five, fellas. Wow, that's more enlightened than two ball.
Now, Susan, that's an easy example.
Mm-hmm.
But let's make things a little bit more complex.
Are you sure? Complexity can sometimes be so confusing.
Let's meet two other Megacorp employees, Roger and Catherine. They're just going into an important meeting. And they're a little nervous.
Big meeting, huh, Roger?
I guess so, babe. All the first stringers are here.
Yeah.
Hope your presentation looks as good as that rack of yours.
Thanks. I hope your report is as hot as that sack of nuts you're packing.
Me too.
Oh, I sure wouldn't want to work there. What went wrong, Doctor?
Well, first of all, Roger used a sports metaphor, first stringer, which is a technique designed to exclude female colleagues.
Well, what about the use of terms describing physical characteristics?
You mean like sack of nuts?
You said it, I didn't.
Well, Susan, obviously Catherine gives as good as she gets. These are two people who have developed a kind of relationship on the job in which these kinds of references are exchanged as readily as observations about the weather. But those sports metaphors could be incredibly exclusionary.
So, if you're talking about going to the rack, make sure you're not talking about the basket?
Make sure you're not talking about the hoop.
Gotcha.
Now, let's look in a little later in that meeting. The CEO of Megacorp, I.L. Ayoff, is talking. But Jason and Elaine aren't taking notes.
So we look forward to a third quarter of significantly increased revenues due to a reprioritizing...
So, Elaine, what do you say? You go to bed with me just once, and you're promoted to vice president.
How about Senior Vice President for Finance.
Hey, what are you trying to do here? Mix business with pleasure?
But I...
Would... Man, I'm glad I discovered this side of you before I gave you more responsibility.
Okay, Jason. A whole weekend. You got it.
You are such a savvy babe.
Ooh, that gives me the willies just watching it.
It is pretty creepy, Susan, even given the absence of sports metaphors. Jason is bullying Elaine using his hierarchical power against her. On the other hand, Elaine doesn't use the designated grievance procedure.
Was that part of the vignette?
No, it's something you find out about only after you need it.
Dr. Jarrett, some people might say that the new standards of sexual harassment inhibit people from even complimenting each other on their appearances.
Susan, that's nonsense. Here's proof that there's a right way to do everything, as Roger notices Catherine's appeal, and vice versa.
Forward to a tightening of that area of operations, the operational area of operations.
Gee, Catherine, I know we should be concentrating on revenue estimates for the third quarter, but... Every time I look at you, my personal Dow Jones registers an all-time high.
Jesus, Roger, lay off, will you?
Okay, but my personal NASDAQ is notching historic gains.
Stop it.
My S&P 500 is...
Will you just chill?
My penny stocks are...
Enough.
So what's the point, Dr. Jarrett?
Susan, let's face it. Roger is a boor. No matter how attractive a co-worker or subordinate may be, there's never an excuse for old-fashioned and time-worn cliches. If you want to get into a colleague's pants, the least you can do is not waste your employer's time by beating around the bush.
So, direct and simple, you get me hot, let's go to the Ramada Inn after work would be appropriate?
I'd suggest a Hilton, but that's a personal choice.
Dr. Jarrett, you've got so much more to share with us. Shouldn't we set aside a grotesquely large portion of another work day to take advantage of your knowledge?
Sounds like a good idea to me, Susan. See you then.
Anatomy of Sexual Harassment is a PlaySafe production.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were talking, you were listening, hopefully you were listening, last week about when the Bush administration decided to press for making the Homeland Security deal a whole separate cabinet agency. And Ari Fleischer had given the date, the official start date of the talks leading to this plan as April 23rd. Well, dig this. May 30th of this year. That's a month after April 23rd, isn't it? Yeah, a month and a week. Dateline, May 30th, Washington. Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge said Thursday he would advise President Bush to veto any legislation creating a congressionally authorized Office of Homeland Security. I'd probably recommend he veto it. Ridge said presidents should be entitled to a few advisors who owe their loyalty solely to the president. I believe the president and future presidents always would be well served having an advisor coordinating the actions among the multiple agencies protecting Homeland Security. I don't think you get that if you're accountable to Congress. May 30th. This is what? June? Thank you. In that while, the Bush administration and the GAO, the General Accounting Office, are still having a little tug of war about how much Clinton departure vandalism there actually was. The government investigation, the GAO, said $19,000 worth of damage, but concluded it may have been typical of recent outgoing administrations. The GAO is the investigative arm of Congress. The GAO based its estimate on at least $19,000 on the funds needed to repair or replace 62 computer keyboards, 26 cellular phones, 15 TV remote controls, 9 historic doorknobs, 2 chairs with broken arms, and 1 presidential seal. Both sides said it validated their charges. Former Clinton aide said it proved the damage was minor and ordinary. The report said some of the same types of observations that were made during the 2001 transition were also made during the 1993 transition from Bush to Clinton. The bulk of the report is an extraordinary exchange between the White House and the GAO. 77 pages of responses from the Bush White House rebutting paragraph by paragraph each one of the GAO's findings, even though Bush officials have repeatedly said they had no interest in furthering the controversy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Advertising Age, Persona Grata. Jenny McDermott is friendly, happy, and fun to hang out with. At least that's what Yahoo by phone callers say about the person who answers when they call 1-800-MY-YAHOO to access email, voicemail, or news, sports, and weather information. But Jenny is not a person at all. She is a persona, or voice-enabled technology developed by Nuance, a company that, like Speechworks and IBM, provides speech recognition and text-to-speech software for marketers looking to extend their brands to the phone. As relationship marketing and customer service become increasingly important retention tools, marketers are trading in touch tone systems or impersonal robotic voices for virtual personas. Nuance creates personas based on customer demographics and focus groups, as well as tailored to the specific tasks the callers will need to accomplish on the phone. In addition to Jenny McDermott, created specifically for Yahoo, Nuance's standard personas include David Sutherland, a CEO of a Midwest insurance firm, and Reed Johnston, a surfer dude turned novelist who reads sports updates to Yahoo callers. Says Wally Brill, director of persona design at Nuance, "We're basically inventing a character." He adds that the persona taking credit card applications over the phone for Wells Fargo is more businesslike than the fun-loving, cheerful Jenny McDermott. "It's got to be appropriate," he said. Jenny McDermott isn't real. Sometimes life delivers crushing blows when I read the trades for you.
A reminder, fans, this Friday night is a very special evening at beautiful Dodger Stadium. Sure, there's a ball game, but it's also steroid night at the House Rupert Board, featuring a special pregame exhibition of batting and frequent urination by baseball legend Mark McGwire. But that's not all. The first 10,000 people through the turnstiles get a coupon good for a free week's supply of Andro. Compliments of the good people who'd rather not be identified by name. It's a great night for the whole family. You'll see a complete ball game if you decide to stay. Plus, you'll get increased muscle mass and a chin as big as all outdoors. And you'll enjoy Mark McGwire swatting him over the fence just the way he used to before his ankles buckled. So make a point of it. Steroid night at Dodger Stadium. Good tickets are on sale right through and after game time. So see you at the ballpark. The Los Angeles Dodgers. Australian rules baseball.
Ladies and gentlemen, remember when the Millennium thing was happening and the New York Times singled out Los Angeles as not having any really Millennium-worthy activities to contrast, let's say, with the Millennium Dome in London, which, of course, became one of the biggest white elephants in history subsequently? Well, they thought they had the dome problem solved. American billionaire Philip Anschutz signaled he was interested in turning the dome into a glittering pop and sports venue. The British government last month gave a consortium led by him the dome and 190 acres of surrounding land for nothing. But now the British newspaper The Guardian says American officials are, the Securities and Exchange Commission is launching a probe into whether Quest Communications, controlled by Anschutz, has used, see if this sounds familiar, improper accounting practices to boost profits falsely and inflate the company's share price. In the 1990s, according to The Guardian, he helped bankroll a group described as one of the most extreme anti-gay organizations in the U.S. So, maybe the dome is doomed after all. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to just put the dome on this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ the planet 7.415 megahertz, around the world on your computer whenever you want it, at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And be just like Los Angeles doing better next millennium, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, uh-huh. All right, say it with me now. The Sea Crane Company is proud to support Le Show, offering long-range radios, antennas, and more for over 25 years. The Sea Crane Radio Light and Science Catalog is available online at ccradio.com or by calling 800-522-8863. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. We're all heroes just for being here. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.